The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hello.
Hello, David.
Hey, Clive, how are you?
It's a great honor that you do me. I know you're a busy man.
I'm following in your footsteps.
You could be talking to Donald Trump, and instead you're talking to me.
That's Clive James. Born in Australia, he spent most of his life in the United Kingdom, and there are very few creatures like him. He's a poet, a novelist, critic, memoirist, TV host, Sunday newspaper columnist, even a TV comedian at one point, but a writer above all.
You left out astronaut. It was my period as an astronaut. It's very little known.
Clive goes to Mars.
Nobody can do everything. And really all I do is write. And my favorite writing of my own is, of course, poetry, but I might not be right about that, and it certainly might not last. For all I know, it might be a few remarks from one of my books of memoirs or from a critical essay, and that'll be it. And, of course, in the last few years, when I've been ill, I've had something new to write about, which is imminent death. I had no idea until I fell ill what it was like not to be healthy.
And how did that happen for you? What was the day you woke up and you were not swinging from the trees?
It was all happened in one evening. It was New Year's Eve of 2009 leading into 2010. And I had to go in because I had sudden kidney failure because of the usual cause, a delayed prostate operation. And while I was in there, I got diagnosed for everything else. I had, in addition to emphysema, which I knew about, I also had a brand of leukemia. I could go on like this for too long. The thing I should do is put it in a poem, and I will soon.
In a sense, you have. You have a collection called Sentence to Life. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's an astonishing book. And early in the collection, there's a poem that is, in a sense, the onset of the great theme that you're dealing with. It's a poem called Landfall, and I thought...
Landfall, I'm very glad you picked that one out.
You'll read it for us?
Hard to believe now that I once was free from pills in heaps, blood tests, x-rays and scans. No pipes or tubes, at perfect liberty. I stained my diary with travel plans. The ticket paid for at the other end, I packed a hold-all and went everywhere, they asked me. One on whom you could depend to show up, I would cross the world by air and come down neatly in some crowded hall. I stood for a full hour to give my spiel. Here I might talk back to a nuisance call, and that's my flight of eloquence. Unreal. But those years in the clear, how real were they, when all the sirens in the signing queue, who clutched their hearts at what I had to say, were just dreams, even when the dream came true. I called it health, but never stopped to think it might have been a kind of weightlessness, that footloose feeling always on the brink of breakdown, the false freedom of excess. Rarely at home in those days, I'm home now, where few will look at me with shining eyes. Perhaps none ever did, and that was how the fantasy of young strength that now dies expressed itself. The face that smiled at mine out of the looking glass was seeing things. Today I am restored by my decline and by the harsh awakening it brings. I was born weak and always have been weak. I came home and was taken into care, a cot case, but at long last I can speak. I am here now, who was hardly even there.
Clive, it's an amazing poem, and the expression of health as deception, as weakness, is that how you look back on it now?
Yes, it was, because that poem's full of regret. A lot of the poems in this little book, Sentence to Life, are full of regret and penitence. I can say briefly, but only briefly, that I did behave badly, and I regret it, and some of these poems are about that. But yes, I have a lot to regret about my days of health. And of course, the opportunity which is offered and demanded by ill health as you look back and reflect.
I think we get it. It's a poem, in a sense, in part about fidelity or the lack of it, and time wasted and time well spent. And do you think being so accessible as a poet, being so clear at a time when many poets are many things, but not that?
It's a difficult time for a poet, but then it always is. And it's difficult in America. Fun thing, there are a lot of American poets. When I look at, say, John Ashbery, he's doing something that I can't do. And there are early poems by Ashbery. There's a poem about Daffy Duck, which I think are works of genius. But I can't really follow him now. Poets will go where you don't expect them to or don't want them to.
You don't just spend your days humped over books and manuscripts. You also binge-watch television with the best of them.
With the worst of them. Yeah, I'm psychotic on the subject.
America is waiting to know what you're binge-watching and why.
I do that in the nighttime after a day's writing and reading. And often I sit with my younger daughter, who's another fanatic, and we don't just watch standard stuff like Band of Brothers and The West Wing three times and The Wire twice and House of Cards and so on. We watch The Following. And believe me, if you watch The Following, Kevin Bacon, the star, is almost the only character on screen who is not a serial killer. But you're never ever going to make a phone call again, David, to one of your serious writers who's going to tell you to watch The Following.
You don't think John Ashbery or Louise Glick, they're at home watching a box full of videos?
They may be, but if they are, they should put it in the poem.
You think most American poetry, as you see it, is too kind of, apart from pop culture?
The way to get established as a prestigious poet is, unfortunately, to write something out of reach of the general public. And I think it should be within reach.
One of your acquaintances and friends, one of the many ones, was Christopher Hitchens. And Christopher Hitchens decided, I am a writer, I am dying, I'm going to do this in public, and I'm going to give speeches, and I will come out without my hair and gaunt and all the rest, and that will be my subject. I see some of this in what your project is now.
Christopher really was brave. There are several big differences here. He was in pain, and I'm not. I've got the lucky version of my disease. And it took great strength and bravery to do what he did. But he fought his way through.
One of the things that he took up as a cause was religion and its opposite. Have you flirted with belief at all? I know you're not a great believer, but have you confronted anew this essential question?
No, nothing shakes my... I don't even call myself an atheist. To me, it's self-evident. My objection to Hitchens, and indeed to Dawkins and that whole bunch of people who toured the world telling the faithful that they were wasting their time, was that it should be self-evident. And if it isn't, there's no point arguing it. I like to think that my own position leaves room for people to have faith, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. I'm only halfway there with the arguments that I would like to develop about this, because right now we're up against it. We're up against a faith that has no uncertainties. And I think we have to find a way of telling our young people, listen, your uncertainties, that's your advantage. The fact that your culture is in doubt is what's good about it.
Well, I think what you're talking about is a form of radical Islam. I mean, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. And if Ayan Hirsi Ali tells Islam it's got to reform itself, we'd better listen. And even more when the president of Egypt President Sisi says the same.
I don't know that I'd want to take moral instruction from General Sisi.
Well, but the question is whether the Islamic clerics want to, and the chances are that they won't. It was the smallest round of applause I ever heard. It's a big question. It's the biggest question.
Well, you talk about in an old kind of Spenglerian, old-fashioned way. You use terms like decline of Western civilization, the preservation of Western civilization, and you have what you have always called a merry personality, but you have a pretty grim view of not only existence but politics. Is that a matter, again, of age, or is this a matter we would have found you like this when you were 40?
Let's not rule out the factor of stupidity. Maybe I'm just dumb on the subject. But I think the secret of staying civilized is to admit that you might be wrong. And I have a low opinion of how mankind behaves left to itself. Yes, I do. On the other hand, I have high hopes for the good instincts of humankind. And it takes a whole culture and a whole cultural view to balance these things up. This is a huge argument. And anytime you ask me for a 12,000-word article on the subject, I'll write it for the magazine.
And I know I'll have it the next day. So we had an incredibly odd and surprising and wonderful thing happen a couple of years ago in 2014. We've had covers and cartoons and occasionally a piece of prose go, as they now say, endlessly viral. And it gets all over the place. It bursts out of the normal readership. And it happened with a poem called Japanese Maple that you published in the magazine.
Yes, it did.
And I wonder if you'd read it for us.
I'm very thankful, by the way, before I read it, that that happened. Most poets don't get that lucky. And I still don't quite know why. Here it is. Can I read it?
Please do.
Japanese Maple. Your death, near now, is of an easy sort. So slow a fading out brings no real pain. Breath growing short is just uncomfortable. You feel the drain of energy, but thought and sight remain. Enhanced, in fact. When did you ever see so much sweet beauty as when fine rain falls on that small tree and saturates your brick-back garden walls? So many amber rooms and mirror halls. Ever more lavish as the dusk descends, this glistening illuminates the air. It never ends. Whenever the rain comes, it will be there, beyond my time, but now I take my share. My daughter's choice, the maple tree, is new. Come autumn, and its leaves will turn to flame. What I must do is live to see that. That will end the game for me, though life continues all the same. Filling the double doors to bathe my eyes, a final flood of colours will live on as my mind dies. Burned by my vision of a world that shone so brightly at the last, and then was gone.
Clive James's most recent book of poems is Sentenced to Life.